Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well. It's a very busy time because we've got our sober coach training going on, which is just always amazing just to get to connect with people who are going to be inspiring everybody else. It's always really exciting to see the people who kind of rock up to do this kind of work. And of course, it's the end of Jan, so there's going to be lots of people who are now thinking, oh, shall I carry on? Shall I not? So if that's you, this week's podcast is hopefully going to help you make your decision. And I hope that is to continue long, long after dry January. So what I thought I'd do this week is share with you part of the interview that I did with William Porter. If you remember, we did an interview with William before Christmas, but I thought I'd also share with you part of the piece that William did for us on our workshop around setting intentions. And the reason for this is that I know there's going to be people listening who did set their intentions for January, whether that's around drinking or some other behavior change. And now we're at the end of the month. There's that little voice in the head that says, oh, well done. You know, you managed a month. And so you can go back to drinking now, or you can go back to whatever habit you've changed. And so we know that that's how the brain works, right? It has that fading effect bias. It helps us go back and see things through those rose-colored specs. So I thought it'd be good to have William remind us again how the brain works, how we can do what we say we want to do, because that's really what it's all about. Whatever's going on for you in your life, it's about being able to focus on what it is you want and then find the tools and the techniques to be authentic, to do what you say you're going to do, because it eats us up, doesn't it, when we're not authentic. It eats us up when we blow our own cover, as it were. You know, that was what was going on with me for years. I was convinced that I was going to stop drinking, that I was going to change the patterns. And then, of course, I never did. So, well, I did eventually. But many, many years went by when I would make that commitment in the middle of the night, you know, usually 3 a.m. when the little voice was telling me it has to stop. And I would kind of make that decision. But then by 6 o'clock the next night, I'd managed to convince myself that it'd be a really good idea just to have one drink. And of course, there are many tools and techniques that we've got to put in place. We absolutely need the connection. We absolutely need the sober toolkit. But in addition, we need to be able to work with our own unconscious mind so that we can reframe these thoughts. So I thought it'd be really good to let William share a bit of the neuroscience, if you like, around it all. In the Sober Club, there's been some really encouraging stuff lately, and I just thought I'd read a little bit of one post, because I think it really shines a light on those early days and what it feels like. I won't give her name, obviously. But this Sober Club member says, I'm finally getting back to into a normal routine after a really busy few weeks. I stopped drinking on the 26th of November, and I am definitely seeing the benefits. In the past few weeks, I've experienced the joy of a new grandson, my birthday, Christmas, a long haul flight, a wedding, jet lag. Previously, all of the above would have been a massive excuse for booze, but not this time. Now, I won't lie, flying and the wedding were tricky and there was a lot of FOMO, but those feelings went and I got through it. My mindset is changing and I'm feeling more positive and confident. Sleep isn't always great, but what I do get is much better. Exercise, weight loss going to be next on the list. It's early days. I'm still checking in every day with you in this club, listening to Janie's podcasts and facing each challenges as they come my way. Looking forward to meeting up with some of you in person. Isn't that lovely? Isn't that just a lovely representation of what life can start to feel like when you put these changes in place? And, you know, this particular Sober Club member had posted before about feeling nervous about flights and, you know, weddings and all of these firsts. They can be tricky. There's no doubt about that. They absolutely can. But you know what? When you get connected, when you get someone cheerleading you, It's all possible. It really is. It's all possible. So if you're going through any of these things, or if you've stopped drinking, but a little voice in your head is saying, well, yeah, it's all well and good for January, but you know, in February, I'm going on holiday, or in February, I've got a wedding, then just know that you can get the tools you need. You can get the connection. Come and join us in the Sober Club. Come and feel supported, and we will be your cheerleaders, I promise you. So let's have a listen to what William has to say. I know it was a few weeks ago, but we're still kind of in New Year mode when I did this piece. William Porter, thank you so much for sharing some stuff with us on this session. So as part of our workshop, what we really wanted to do was look at setting intentions, well, letting go what we no longer need. So, you know, what's gone from last year, what we can release with love and acceptance. and then very much looking forward to a new year. I don't know whether I should have asked you actually to think about it, but maybe as we chat, you might come up with something. But I've asked everyone to try and come up with a word or a phrase that feels important for them. So you can let me know at some other point, but it's quite a nice thing to do, to have a phrase that kind of encompasses what it is you want to focus on, you know, for the year ahead.
Right.
But what I really, where we'd really love your expertise, William, as the sort of king of logic and the you know, bringing in the kind of neuroscience piece, if you like, is we've been speaking about the importance of focusing on intentions and what it is we want. You know, in the old days, we might call them resolutions. I don't really believe in resolutions, but I do believe in setting intentions and actually determining what we want. And so most of us are able to do that. We've got a few things that feel important. Perhaps we've chosen a word for the year, something we really want to focus on. And yet we know that it's highly possible that give it a week, give it a month, we're going to be right back where we started. Because we know this with New Year's resolutions, don't we? We've all done it. We've all been there, done it, got the t-shirt. We've put a whole list of things, you know, I'll go to the gym every week. I'll stop eating chocolate. I'll give up wine. I'll do X and Y. I'll learn to play the piano. And really, we set ourselves up to fail. So why is that in our nature to kind of go after something and then fail, as it were?
Well, certainly talking about giving things up, there are some psychological factors at play here. Well, one of them is called fading effect bias. Fading effect bias is quite interesting. It's a universal human trait. So when I use the word universal, I mean, it's not just we in the West or we in Britain or we in America. It's not culturally, it's throughout the entire human race. All humans display this tendency. And it's essentially a tendency to look back on past events more positively than when we actually experience them. Mm. So it's basically nostalgia, the good old days. So what we do, we look back on things and we tend to forget the bad and remember the good. No one's really sure why we have this tendency, but I think the prevailing theory is it just helps people maintain a more positive outlook on life, because you look back on the past and you remember it as being all, you know, happy and fluffy, whereas it might not necessarily be. So actually, you know, generally speaking, it's a good thing. But where it starts to cause problems is when we are, for example, drinking, because this is something I think quite useful to try and picture in your mind. A clock, think of a 24-hour period of time. Now, if you have a drink of alcohol, it's going to go into your bloodstream within 5 or 10 minutes, and it's going to last, you know, the effect of it is going to last 15, 20 minutes maybe. So you're going to get a sedating effect for about 15, 20 minutes. So let's for the moment park the question of whether that's even enjoyable, because that's up for grabs anyway, and I don't necessarily agree it is, because we tend to drink in enjoyable situations anyway, and it's the situation rather than the alcohol we're enjoying. But what happens after that 20-minute period is the alcohol wears off, leaving a corresponding feeling of anxiety. Again, I've covered the basic physiological principles of alcohol many, many times. So but basically what happens is your brain tries to counter the sedating effects of the alcohol, and it basically does that by becoming oversensitive. So whatever sedating effect you have from a drink of alcohol, you'll have a corresponding feeling of anxiety when it wears off. So for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. You have that initial 15, 20 minutes, and then it wears off, leaving you feel out of sorts and a bit anxious. It's like when you drink too much caffeine. Now, it also raises your heart rate and blood pressure, and the knock-on effect of that in the short term is you feel tired. Because when your heart speeds up, when your blood pressure goes too high, your natural defense mechanism is to sit down and rest to let it drop. So when that happens, so you've had your drink, you've had that initial buzz, then you have the anxiety, then you have that kind of that feeling of feeling heavy and a bit out of shape and just tired. But although you feel tired, you can't sleep because alcohol stops you going through your natural sleep cycles. So you're then awake most of the night, or certainly after the first 5 hours, you tend to wake up, you can't sleep, and then the next day it kind of hangs on. So even one drink, you've got 15 minutes of, in inverted commas, enjoyment, followed by something in the region of 23 hours, 45 minutes, feeling pretty rubbish. And that's just from one drink. If you're drinking more, you don't necessarily get more enjoyment because the more you drink, the more intoxicated you get, and actually the less you're enjoying yourself anyway. And of course, the knock-on effect is you feel even worse the next day because you have a full-on hangover. The anxiety goes up, the effect on your sleep's dramatically increased. So go back to that 24-hour period, you're getting at most a few hours in inverted commas enjoyment, followed by 16, 20 hours of feeling rubbish. When you look back on your drinking, out of that 24-hour period, you concentrate on the tiny little bit at the beginning where you thought you were actually enjoying it. And that's basically what fading effect bias is. You forget. So the life of a drinker is, let's be generous and say it's 10% enjoyment before all the bad things kick in. You're only looking at that 10%. You're discounting the entire 90% of feeling rubbish.
So, yeah, it is fascinating, the fading effect bias, isn't it? The way we kind of look back with rose-coloured spectacles or whatever. But I guess what we're saying then is that when it comes to having set an intention for something, whether it's stopping drinking or maybe it's I don't know, exercising or whatever it is, I suppose we have that intention, and then other thoughts come in, or life happens, or we have a conversation with somebody that's upsets us, or we get overwhelmed or anxious, or whatever it might be. Life, happens, and then we start to feel, anxious or upset or guilty or sad or needing a reward, whatever the emotion is. And then that's when the default position is, oh, I know how I deal with said emotion. I reach for a drink, or I do X and Y, rather than, the desired behavior that you've written down on your bit of paper, as it were. So suddenly, whether and even though you'd said, okay, I'm going to do yoga or whatever, suddenly you're feeling upset and miserable and a bit fed up, and you absolutely are not going to be getting in the car and going to yoga because you're feeling too sorry for yourself. That's have I kind of got that right?
But basically, it's exactly that. It's so whenever we're making a decision on something, you're making it in light of the information available. So, you might sit there and you think, well, I'm going to do yoga, I'm going to stop drinking, blah, 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 because you're feeling good, you're feeling positive, and you know you're going to do it. But fast forward a few days, and like you say, you have a bad experience, you're just feeling rubbish. Suddenly, you've got a whole load of new data, which is, you know what, I don't want to do this. I want to stay at home and just huddle on the sofa, or I want to drink a glass of wine, or whatever it is. So that's it. It's exactly that.
And then, of course, that then brings its own issues, because then we start to beat ourselves up, in inverted commas, and then we start, oh, well, I mean, tell us about this word willpower, because that's when people usually go, oh, well, that I'm just rubbish, I've got no willpower.
I never really went much in for willpower. For me, it was all about, like I say, it was based on the information that was available. So I just said to myself, right, I need to, for example, stop drinking or stop smoking. And then fast forward a day or two, and it's like, well, actually, I've changed my mind. I didn't see it as willpower. I just thought, okay, a few days ago, I wanted to stop, but now I want to do it again. And that was one of the things that I really wanted to delve into and understand why there was that kind of swinging backwards and forwards. And a lot of it was because, like I say, that fading effect bias, because when you're in the middle of, for example, drinking, it isn't particularly pleasant. You don't like it. You're waking up feeling awful, thinking, I don't want to keep doing this. But as soon as you fast forward for a period of time, you're forgetting that. You're only concentrating on the, oh, wasn't it lovely to have a glass of wine the other night? I want to do that again. And I don't care about anything else. I just want to do it. So what the reality is not changing, but what you're focusing in is. Because you said, Jenny, if you said to me, like, I've got this magic pill that'll make you feel really good, I'd say, oh, that sounds nice, I'll have that. But if you said, well, actually, I've got this magic pill that'll make you feel really bad, I'd say, well, no, thank you. And that's really what we're doing with that passage of time. When we're immersed in it, we understand that it's not pleasant. But when you fast forward a bit of time, you're forgetting that and looking at the good. So of course you want it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it really is all about the associations, isn't it, that are around said behavior, you know. And I think because as you say, we seek pleasure, don't we? That's
Yeah, we do.
of course you want the happy pill, not the miserable pill. That's completely understandable. And so we in that's why I think with things like resolutions, we set ourselves up to fail. You know, yes, on that 1st of January, I might decide I am going to get up at, 5 a.m. every day and going to do an early yoga class. And it seems like a fantastic idea in that moment. But the reality, is that it's cold and I'm tired and I'm probably not going to do it, and then the car's all iced up. And then if the next thing that happens is that then I start to feel really bad about myself. So I think, oh, well, who cares anyway? I may as well just go and have, 1800 Jaffa cakes because I'm lazy anyway. So then you get into a whole spiral
Yeah,
of
you
beating
do.
yourself up for what you're not doing.
Yeah.
So what would you say is how do we counter this then? Because yes, self-improvement is what is what we want, isn't it? Of course we want to improve our lives. Of course we want to change some behaviors. So how can we do this realistically and make that connection, if you like, for our unconscious mind to be able to understand that this is going to be a good thing? I mean, number one, I guess we should make it realistic. Going to yoga at 5 a.m. ain't. But once we've made a realistic behavior change decision, how can we then work with our unconscious mind so that we can keep on the path, as it were?
So a lot of this stuff that we're talking about either short-term gain for long-term pain or short-term pain for long-term gain.
Oh,
Okay,
crikey.
that makes
Explain that
sense.
then. Yeah, I
So
like it.
what you're doing is, so I'm going to have a glass of wine. I'm going to get a short-term gain, so 15 minutes of feeling good, followed by long-term pain because I'm going to sleep badly and I'm going to wake up feeling rubbish. Okay, but with exercise or yoga or meditation, think of it as short-term pain. So I don't particularly want to do this, but I'm going to, followed by long-term gain. So you go to do a bit of exercise, you will feel good for the whole rest of the day, you will sleep better, and over long term you will get fit. The other thing I would say is trust the system because it gets easier. So if you're thinking about exercising, it's going to be very difficult to begin with because if you're thinking about starting exercising, it means you haven't been exercising, so you're probably at your least fit. So it's going to be hard and unpleasant to do it. But as you do it more and more, there'll be a couple of things that happen. Firstly, most importantly, you feel less self-conscious because, like, whether you're going to the gym for the first time or going for a run or whatever, you do feel incredibly self-conscious. It's really unpleasant going out. But if you're in that situation, just think about the last person you saw jogging and what they looked like. I bet you can't even remember because we don't see people. So if you're going to do it, people won't even notice you. So just bear that in mind to begin with. When you exercise, your brain releases endorphins, which are a naturally occurring chemical which makes you feel good. Now, if you, for example, say to yourself, right, I'm going to go for a power walk for 20 minutes every morning, you'll feel self-conscious, it'll be really hard work, you'll be puffing and panting, and it won't feel very good. But you'll get some endorphins released, so you'll feel better for it. And the second time you go, you'll be getting fitter, so you'll be getting slightly stronger. And within a week, a couple of weeks, it won't be painful anymore because your body will be used to it. And because getting in the endorphin rush, you'll actually start to enjoy it. And it starts to take on its own momentum. I'm sometimes thinking about changing our behaviors is like pushing a really heavy stone. It's very hard to get it moving, but as soon as you get some momentum up, it starts to get easier and easier, and suddenly it just rolls off on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you, what's your thinking around this kind of idea that it takes around 21 days, they say, don't they, sometimes to sort of cement in a new habit? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I found it to be quicker than that. I suppose everybody's different, but I find so I quite easily, I even now slip into quite bad eating habits. And it takes me a while to get out of them. But when I do get out of them, I find within like 2 or 3 days, I sort of settle into a routine quite nicely. And I don't know if it's because I've done it before, or maybe if I was doing it for the very first time, it would be difficult. But I find it to be much quicker than that.
Yeah. And what's your take on how we kind of make decisions, if you like, and make commitments? What do you think is the importance of that when it comes to sticking to what we've said we're going to do?
So I'm a very big believer in there's two different approaches that we take to life. And I noticed it most when I came back from being in Iraq with the parachute regiment, and it was one of the most difficult things I had getting back into civilian life. And I can best explain it as, if you go to like your average office and you say to someone, can you do X, Y, and Z, they might come back to you and say, I couldn't do it. And they may have very valid reasons why they couldn't do it, but the fact is they don't do it. Whereas in the military, and particularly in the parachute regiment, if someone gets told go and do something, it gets done. It doesn't matter if you have to blow a building up or wreck a vehicle or whatever, it gets done. It just, that's all there is. I remember seeing a meme once, and it was like a maze, a wooden maze. And there was an entrance at one corner and there was some cheese at the other corner. And all the walls had been completely destroyed by a straight line, and the mouse was eating the cheese. So it just dived through completely everything. It said at the top something like paratrooper mentality. But that's the kind of mentality you need. You've got to say to yourself, right, I'm going to do this, and that is the priority. Nothing else matters, because it's very easy to say, right, I'm going to do this. Oh, but I've got this coming up, or it's going to be difficult on this occasion. You have to change your mentality slightly to say, this is now the priority. This gets done first and everything else falls into place. And it can sometimes be easier to just say to yourself, well, I'm just going to do it for 21 days and see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think with alcohol, you know, when people are stopping drinking, I think having a period of time at the beginning can be beneficial. It can feel way too big to just say, I'm going to stop forever. So, you know, having 30 days or 90 days or whatever, it feels much more manageable for your unconscious mind to be able to cope with. I think it would have been hard for me at the beginning. It was hard enough to sort of recognize that I could stop at all. I think if I'd tried to say forever at the beginning, it was too much. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think different things work for different people, but I think that's absolutely the case. You know, that's that old AA adage of take one day at a time, because, you know, everyone can manage a single day and you're just stringing those days together. Yeah. But you're right as well. It gives you kind of like a, because at the end of the day, what we're really looking for is life better drinking or not drinking?
Absolutely.
You don't necessarily have to commit to the rest of your life not drinking. Say, right, I'll give myself a period of time and I'll assess it after that. With alcohol, the one caveat around that is, I would say it can take time to fully reap the benefits of
absolutely
drinking.
Yeah, you totally
need to give it time. And the other slight thing I would just warn people about, if there is a tendency to, right, I'm going to go a month without drinking, and then, do you want to go out tonight? No, because I'm not drinking. So because it's short term, you change your behavior knowing that it's short term. But really, to taste a sober life, you have to at least try and go and do the things that you thought you needed a drink in order to do them without drinking, and see if you actually enjoy them or not. So
yeah.
If you are doing it for a short period, please don't think, well, okay, I just won't go out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, where I'm always sort of saying that we have to focus on everything we're gaining, you know, rather than seeing it as, oh, I'm deprived, I'm giving up, I can't do something. We think about all the everything that we're gaining, more time and potentially more energy and starting to feel better and all of that. That's right. But, you know, I guess whatever people's intentions are, actually, again, the same kind of rules apply. We have to be, you know, that's why we've spent so long kind of looking at this and making these decisions as to what are the key things, what are the key intentions, it might just be one, that we have for ourselves for the year ahead, and how important is it to us? Because if it really is important to us, then, as you say, we're going to have that paratrooper mentality, and we're going to be able to make it non-negotiable. And the reality is, if it isn't, you know, when I used to write my New Year's resolutions in the old days and say, oh, I'm going to learn to play the piano, I wasn't really, you know, it's just something nice to write down. It wasn't really important to me. It wasn't, I wasn't going to make it non-negotiable. I was just kidding myself. So, you know, I think again, it comes back to that reflection, that awareness, doesn't it? Okay, what really feels good for me, and am I willing to make it non-negotiable? Because once you are, then, you know, actually, as you say, you can go you, everyone can go after what it is they really want.
Yeah, and I completely echo that, and I'd say as well, following on from it, you don't have to do everything at once. So it's very tempting, like, it's January, I'm going to stop drinking, I'm going to eat sensibly, I'm going to exercise. Whereas actually, I personally found it was far better for me to stop drinking for a few weeks to get back to sleeping properly. I would feel a bit healthier. My heart rate got back to normal. Then you can look at the exercise and you start doing that. And then you can start looking, you know, you don't have to do everything at the moment. Just because it's New Year doesn't mean you have to do everything. It's better to do one thing, then the next, and make it stick, than try to do all three at once and fail. Because, like you said, Jenny, there is that mentality, well, you know what, I've failed now, so I'll throw it all out the window.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose, you know, many of us are naturally procrastinators. It's always easier. Why would I do it today if I can do it tomorrow? You know, there's that, isn't there? And that I mean, we're not all like that, but I do think it you know, the busier we get, the more stuff we want to put off. But ultimately, I think it probably comes back to that same old thing, is when we start to like ourselves and start to respect ourselves, then we can perhaps start to get real clarity on, well, so what is important for me then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found as well, when I stopped drinking, so my mental resilience came back. You know, I just felt better. I felt stronger. And of course, when you start to get fitter as well, that builds into it. And that again was a good stepping stone to start to look to control other parts of my life. For me personally, and this might not be true for everyone, if I tried to sort out my eating while I was still drinking, it just wasn't going to happen. I needed to do that drinking first to start to get back to thinking, you know what, I can do this. I can control what I'm eating. I can exercise. I enjoy exercise. I don't enjoy it when I'm hungover or drinking because of my heart rate going through the roof. It makes it incredibly difficult. But when I haven't been, I actually quite enjoy it. So for me, that was almost like the building block upon which everything else was built.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think, you know, it's one thing at a time if it's a really big behaviour change like that. Absolutely. So just briefly then, for people who, you know, we hear, don't we, a lot about people who have been sober for a long period of time, and then they go back to drinking. I mean, sometimes it's a few weeks, few months, but we even hear of people who, I think there's a few, definitely a few sober club members who've said that, you know, they've been sober for over a year, and then they start drinking again, and it always goes bad. To date, I haven't met anyone who says, yeah, I had a, you know, just over a year off of drinking, felt great and all the rest of it, gone back to drinking, it's great. I haven't met anyone who says that, because it never is, right? Never is. But I do find that interesting I wonder what your view is there in terms of how does the brain work with that one then, particularly if someone has kind of tick the boxes, as it were. They've you know, they've they've focused on what they're gaining. They've enjoyed being sober. They've done it all. Do you think it's because their mentality is such that it's like, okay, well, I set myself a challenge. I was doing a year. I've done my year. So now my reward is to drink. Is it about that, or is there something else going on?
I'd stopped for some quite extended periods before and started again. And obviously, I can't speak for anyone else, but for me, it wasn't the reward thing. But what I would find is you would stop drinking and you'd reap all these benefits. I think there's a few points. One, the benefits come slowly, and they can
Yeah.
be easy to miss. So it's very easy to sit there a year sober, look at people drinking and think, oh, that looks fun, and forget how tired and, just heavy
Well,
your
fading effect
run was.
bias, as we've
Yeah,
been
well,
saying.
exactly. There's exactly that. But the other point is we need to remember that we live in a very alcohol-centric society,
Yeah.
and everybody who drinks, all 86% of the population, have a vested interest in portraying alcohol as fun and benign and lovely. So, you open Instagram and you open Facebook and there's pictures of people relaxing with their drinks and it's Christmas, TV, films, soap operas,
Yeah.
music about alcohol. We're bombarded constantly about what a great thing it is to drink. So on the one hand, you start taking the benefits of sobriety for granted because you don't wake up every day thinking, wow, this is fantastic. You should do. You should every day remember how awful you felt when you were drinking, but you don't. You wake up and you're just, okay, you feel fantastic compared to when you were drinking, but because you've been living it for so long, it's just normal.
Yeah.
On one hand, you start to forget and not appreciate the benefits of society. And on the other hand, you're still being bombarded with this, oh, there's Fred and Jan with their drinks on their sun loungers and the Christmas meal, and doesn't that look lovely? I think over time it's just like a castle in the sand, just getting eventually washed away by the waves. And I think that's why sober community is so important,
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
you're keeping that nonsense at bay and you're keeping in mind the reality of what you would be going back to. Because as you
Yeah.
say, it never works well.
Never works. And you're absolutely right. That's why I think it's so important that, we've spoken a bit about gratitude, and it's so important that people keep that gratitude going. And I mean, I don't call it a gratitude list, but I call it a blessings list. But every day, if you particularly for the first few months, write down a few blessings that have only come about because you're alcohol free, so that you're constantly repopulating that side of the brain that has these good associations with not drinking, rather than the many years of fading effect bias, which will go back to the drinking. Yeah, it's very true. So finally then, William, what should, if you just had to leave us with one tip, then what, for keeping to the intentions that we've made, whatever they are, what would that be?
I would say, particularly when it comes to drinking, is stick to the reality. Remember that don't get sucked into. I sometimes talk of it as lazy thinking. If you just sit back and let your thoughts work on their own, they will lead you places you might not want to go. And one of those is, oh, wasn't it great to be a drinker? It doesn't take much effort, but when you start looking at people and thinking, oh, that looks really nice, stop and think of the reality. I'm incapable of looking at people drinking now without seeing them waking up at 4 in the morning. And I hate that way. You're exhausted, your heart will be beating, you feel really anxious, really tired, but couldn't sleep. And that's what I see when I see people drinking. So you're not trying to convince yourself of something that isn't true. Just stick with the reality. Don't
Yeah, dead right.
into that kind of thinking.
That is, it's literally when the thoughts start to turn into, oh, wouldn't it be lovely? Oh, I'm going to feel great if I do that. You can pause and say, is that true? Is it actually
That's
true? Answer, no, it really
it.
isn't. You took that thought to the courtroom. The answer will be no. You ain't going to win that one,
No.
right? Totally right. Brilliant. Thank you so much, William. It's always fantastic to talk to you. Just remind us again where people can find all of your stuff.
Probably where best place to start is the website, which is alcoholexplained.com.
Brilliant. I'll put all those links in. Thank you so much, William, and have a
Thanks, Jamie.
fantastic rest of the year, but we'll see you
See
soon, I'm sure.
you soon. Thank you.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
everyone. Bye.
Thank you, William. Much appreciated. As always, you know where to find William's stuff. Always, always get a copy of Alcohol Explained. It's a really great book to just serve up that logic piece. And if you do join us in the Sober Club, there are three exclusive videos with William talking about the specifics of cravings. So there's some really good stuff there. Just to mention a few dates. Oh, it's fantastic to see some of you last weekend, by the way. And the next thing that I've got coming up is on the 25th of February in York, when we have our Family Constellations Day. So if that interests you, please do have a look at thesoberclub.com, click on events and see if you can get yourself to York for that Family Constellations Day. It's really life changing. If you've no idea what it is, have a read of some of the blog posts and see if you want to feel open enough to come and check it out. The weekend before that, it's not something that I'm involved in. I'm not speaking at the event, but I just want to flag up an event in London. It's on Saturday, the 17th of February, and it's the Weston A. Price Foundation. Weston, spelt W-E-S-T-O-N, the Weston A. Price Foundation. And the event is called Nutrient Dense Traditional Foods for Healthy Families. And it's really exactly that. It's what it says on the tin. I went along to a Weston A. Price conference about 10 years ago now, and it literally rocked my world. It kind of changed everything. So if you really are interested in optimum health and well-being and really good food, proper nutrient dense food, then check out Weston A. Price. One of the speakers live on a live video link is Sally Fallon Morell, who is just the most incredible author. Her books are really incredible. And there's a homeopath speaking, there's a bioresonance expert, there's someone from the Institute of Nutrition, there's a few nutritional therapists there. It's going to be a really interesting day if you want to really deep dive into nutrition. So that's Saturday, 17th of February. If you go to thesoberclub.com, you'll see a blog post there, or just message me or check out my Facebook and you'll see a little piece about that. Hopefully I'll see some of you on the 25th of Feb, if not before. By the way, I do have an interview coming up talking about nutrient dense food. I do have an interview coming up with Rob Hobson. You may have seen his he's a leading nutritionist. You may have seen that his book, Unprocess Your Life, has been serialized in a few mainstream mags. I think it was serialized in the Mail. Some fantastic recipes and just really easy ways of getting away from processed foods, which, you know, ultimately is going to really help you, particularly, again, if you're in the early weeks of ditching the booze. The nutrition piece, I just can't overestimate how important it is. So that's going to be a great interview with Rob Hobson, nutritionist, on that new book. Got some really good stuff lined up for you. But as always, if you've got any ideas of someone you'd like me to interview on the podcast, just drop me a message, particularly if you can introduce me, that would be good. Just drop me a line and I'll see if I can get hold of them and get them on the podcast. We're going to be doing another live podcast, by the way, coming up soon. Oh, and the other thing to remind you of is, for those people who are interested in at some point becoming a training to be a sober coach, I've got a free webinar, free session online, which is going to be Wednesday, the 21st of February, on what it means to be a sober coach. What does it mean to be a sober coach? So if you go to events, thesoberclub.com, click on events, then you can register for that. That's something of interest to you. If you're doing this hard thing, if you're at the end of dry January, if you're making a behavior change, if you're several months in, but for some reason you're still feeling a bit flat, reach out, tell someone. You can absolutely tell me. I will respond to messages if I possibly can. I'll hold that space for you. I'll hold the vision. Get connected. Join us in the Sober Club. It's thesoberclub.com. Very easy to find. And if you want to support this work, you can go to buymeacoffee.com/Janie Lee Grace. But as always, I would much rather meet you in person. So I really hope that happens at some point. Have yourself a great weekend and I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.